Brigham spoke to the scruffy undercover officer at the wheel, and the van was rolling before the back doors closed, out into the pleasant fall afternoon. Clarice Starling, a veteran of surveillance vans, ducked under the eyepiece of the periscope and took a seat in the back as close as possible to the 150-pound block of dry ice that served as air conditioning when they had to lurk with the engine turned off. The old van had the monkey house smell of fear and sweat that never scrubs out. It had borne many labels in its time. The dirty and faded signs on the doors were 30 minutes old. The bullet holes, plugged with Bondo, were older. The back windows were one-way mirror, appropriately tarnished. Starling could watch the big black SWAT vans following. She hoped they wouldn't spend hours buttoned down in the vans. The mail officers looked her over whenever her face was turned to the window. FBI Special Agent Clarice Starling, 32, always looked her age, and she always made that age look good, even in fatigues. Brigham retrieved his clipboard from the front passenger seat. "How come you always catch this crap, Starling?" he said, smiling. "Because you keep asking for me," she said. "For this I need you. But I see you serving warrants on jump-out squads, for Christ's sake. I don't ask, but somebody at Buzzard's Point hates you, I think. You should come work with me. These are my guys, Agents Marquez Burke and John Hare, and this is Officer Bolton from the D.C. Police Department." A composite raid team of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Drug Enforcement Administration SWAT teams, and the FBI, was the force-fit product of budget constraints in a time when even the FBI Academy was closed for lack of funding. Burke and Hare looked like agents. The D.C. policeman, Bolton, looked like a bailiff. He was about 45, overweight, and yeasty. The mayor of Washington, anxious to appear tough on drugs after his own drug conviction, insisted the D.C. police share credit for every major raid in the city of Washington. Hence, Bolton. "The Drumgo's posse's cooking today," Brigham said. "Evelda Drumgo? I knew it," Starling said without enthusiasm. Brigham nodded. "She's opened an ice plant beside the Feliciana fish market on the river. Our guy says she's cooking a batch of crystal today. And she's got reservations to Grand Cayman tonight. We can't wait." Crystal methamphetamine, called ice on the street, provides a short, powerful high and is murderously addictive. "The dope's DEA business, but we need a Velda on interstate transportation of Class 3 weapons. Warrant specifies a couple of Beretta submachine guns and some MAC-10s, and she knows where a bunch more are. I want you to concentrate on a Velda, Starling. You've dealt with it before. These guys will back you up." "We got the easy job," Officer Bolton said with some satisfaction. "I think you better tell them about Evelda, Starling," Brigham said. Starling waited while the van rattled over some railroad tracks. "Evelda will fight you," she said. "She doesn't look like it. She was a model, but she'll fight you. She's Dijon Drumgo's widow. I arrested her twice on RICO warrants, the first time with Dijon. This last time she was carrying a 9mm with 3 magazines and mace in her purse, and she had a Balisong knife in her bra. I don't know what she's carrying now. The second arrest, I asked her very politely to give it up, and she did. Then in D.C. detention, she killed an inmate named Marsha Valentine with a spoon shank. So you don't know. Her face is hard to read. Grand jury found self-defense. She beat the first RICO count and pled the other one down. Some weapons charges were dropped because she had infant children and her husband had just been killed in the Pleasant Avenue drive-by, maybe by the spliffs. I'll ask her to give it up. I hope she will. We'll give her a show, but listen to me. If we have to subdue Evelda Drumgo, I want some real help. Never mind watching my back. I want some weight on her. Gentlemen, don't think you're going to watch me and Evelda mud wrestling." There was a time when Starling would have deferred to these men. Now they didn't like what she was saying, and she had seen too much to care. "Evelda Drumgo is connected through Dijon to the Trayate Crips," Brigham said. "She's got Crip security, our guy says, and the Crips are distributing on the coast. It's security against the spliffs, mainly. I don't know what the Crips will do when they see it's us. They don't cross the G if they can help it." "You should know. Evelda's HIV positive," Starling said. "Dijon gave it to her off a needle. She found out in detention and flipped out. She killed Marsha Valentine that day and she fought the guards in jail. If she's not armed and she fights, you can expect to get hit with whatever fluid she has to throw. She'll spit and she'll bite. She'll wet and defecate on you if you try to pat her down, so gloves and masks are standard operating procedure. If you put her in a patrol car, when you put your hand on her head, watch out for a needle in her hair and secure her feet." Burke's and Hare's faces were growing long. Officer Bolton appeared unhappy. He pointed with his wattled chin at Starling's main sidearm, a well-worn Colt 45 government model with a strip of